And what we just finished was the personality of Godhead being very merciful, and Narada in his previous life being very devoted to the personality of Godhead. The Lord showed himself within the heart of Narada in his previous life as a small boy when engaged in meditation. And Narada's whole consciousness became totally enlivened. His body was exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy. Tears were streaming from his eyes. He was just in a transcendental state of bhava. And then as suddenly as the Lord appeared, he disappeared. And Narada was very startled and jumped up and looked around and couldn't find the Lord, sat back down, tried to again capture that moment of the Lord's darshan, and to no avail, because the Lord can't be captured by mechanical means or our own efforts. And then the Lord spoke. So what we heard yesterday afternoon was what the Lord spoke. And there were three verses. One was in a consoling tone and mood. The Lord said, "O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me. Because the more you hanker for me, the more you'll be freed from all material desires." Indicating that he wasn't free from all material desires. And the previous verse was that normally I only show myself to those who are perfected souls and free from all material taints, but I've shown myself to you because I wanted to encourage you and to make you hanker more. Then the Lord spoke a principle, that is, by service to the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. We discussed what intelligence in me means, because Krishna uses that phrase a number of places: buddhi, yoga, and with mind absorbed in me, intelligence always engaged in my service. So we need some intelligence. Intelligence directs the activities of the grosser forms of matter, and spiritual intelligence directs them to Krishna and to Krishna's service. So attaining that fixed intelligence is an award that Krishna gives when he sees someone very sincerely striving. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam prityapurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam. Discuss that idea. So that soul can come to Krishna. And then the Lord says that not only in this life one has that experience, but after this life one comes to my eternal abode and continues the same in an eternal position. And then he concluded that intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time. And he emphasizes that by saying, you will remember this experience even after the time of cosmic annihilation, because that was one of the questions that was asked by Vyas. How is it that you can remember something 8,432,000 years ago? How could you remember the details of your previous life, because it was a previous day of Brahma? And the whole night of Brahma has passed, and you can remember like it was yesterday. How is that? So the Lord gives that remembrance. We discussed that idea further also. The body of Narada was not like the kind we have, in that it was fully spiritualized, so much so that Narada could do all kinds of things in his fully spiritualized body, including this one. Like yesterday, remember what happened in a previous day of Brahma. So that ends Narada's report of what the Lord spoke. And then the next is how Narada processed what happened. The meditation, the seeing of the Lord disappearing, and then the Lord speaking. Then is so it's how Narada processed that. And he's sharing this with Vyas. Because Vyas is going to have the same program happen under Narada's direction. He's going to sit down, the Lord's going to appear, he's going to experience that form of the Lord, and then he's going to do something. He's going to process that experience. And it's already instructed by Narada how we to process that experience. He used to write, because that's Vyas's thing. That's his gift. And how Narada processes is first mentioned is deep feelings of gratitude, and obeisances. And when obeisances means it's an expression of humility before another, and so with that submission comes a mood of service. Gratitude and submission naturally follows for someone that's genuinely or from the heart doing these things. Then service follows according to the master, according to the indications. And then that indicates what his service was. Vyasa's was to write. Narada's was to do what Narada does. Even in the previous birth, he didn't have Veena, didn't have the name Narada, wasn't the son of Brahma, but his service propensity was he traveled about and chanted the glories of the Lord in a fully satisfied, humble, non-envious spirit. And then the conclusion of what we're going to discuss this morning is he did that till the end of his life, and then like lightning and thunder happened simultaneously, so also Narada at the end of his life gave up his material body, manifested a fit for Vaikuntha spiritual body. But then we also discussed this yesterday, the Lord had some other service for him in this world, and so he didn't immediately go to the Vaikuntha realm. He had some other service to do. So we'll go back now. The Lord finished speaking. Here's what Narada says. Then that supreme authority, personified by sound and unseen by eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. Feeling a sense of gratitude, I offered my obeisances unto him. bowing my head. Short purport, but Prabhupada is emphasizing this language here. Nabho lingam alingam. He was personified by sound, but unseen by the eyes. Alingam. His form could not be seen, but his presence could be seen or experienced through sound. Nabha lingam alingam. Personified by sound, unseen by the eyes. So Prabhupada's comment is that the fact that he was not seen but only heard doesn't make any difference. It was as he saw and then the Lord disappeared and then he heard, the experience was the same. I mean, spiritually, equal. Not, there's variety in the spiritual world, so seeing and hearing activate different senses, but the spiritual sound of the Lord speaking is the same as what the Vedas are. That's the next sentence of the purport. The Vedas are manifested by the breathing of the Supreme Lord. And one who hears the Vedas is hearing the form of the Lord through sound. So Prabhupada writes, he is seen and realized through transcendental sounds of the Vedas. And similarly, the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna speaking. The one who hears Krishna speaking, we discussed this yesterday, Arjuna heard Krishna speaking, and he went from exhibiting ordinary material consciousness on the platform of the body to transcendental consciousness ready to serve whatever Krishna wanted with full consciousness of him. And we discussed, well, somebody might say that was good for Arjuna, but we're not going to have the opportunity to hear Krishna directly speaking, so might as well pack it in and forget it. Just keep enjoying. But Prabhupada's response to that is a thunderous no, that one who hears Krishna's message from one who has heard Krishna's message, or one who has heard Krishna's message from one who has heard Krishna's message from one who has heard Krishna's message, or one who speaks the message in disciplic succession, that is directly Krishna speaking, although it's third person. He said, Krishna said, surrender unto me. It's the same as Krishna speaking when Krishna says, surrender unto me. And that's the potency or mystery of disciplic succession. Krishna is speaking. And the effect is the same, or can be the same, as long as you're not Dhritarashtra, hearing Sanjaya say, Krishna said. As long as you're Arjuna-like, or in the bhaktosime sakha jeti mood, the friend and devotee of Krishna, then Krishna will speak to you. That's how we should read Bhagavad Gita. When you open Bhagavad Gita, you can make a little pause and meditate on Krishna wants to speak something to me. And Prabhupada wants to deliver that message. It's got my name on the envelope. Let's see what's inside. And read in that way. It's a personal message for you. Because each of us has a relationship with Krishna, the message inside may read within our hearts a little bit differently, but it's a very personal message of how to come to Krishna. That's how the bhakta takes Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking to me. Of course, not in a selfish way, Krishna speaking to each of us, but it's very personal. And Prabhupada says there's no difference between Krishna speaking directly or Krishna speaking directly or Krishna speaking directly. There's the Lord spoke to Narada, the Lord manifested the Vedas, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. It's identical. The drama is different, the essence is none different. Krishna is speaking directly. He's present in that sound vibration. And Srimad Bhagavatam itself is that sound form of the Lord. The conclusion is that the Lord can be seen and heard by persistent chanting of the transcendental sound. This is what Narada did. There's a few other things that accompanied that persistent chanting. One of them was detachment. He exhibited varieties of detachment, like the calamitous event of his mother being killed, dying from a poisonous serpent's bite. He was just a small boy. So it's not like, oh, I don't care about my mother. It wasn't that kind of detachment. It was recognizing this is a benediction of the Lord, we discussed. It doesn't look like a benediction. It looks like something horrible. Horrible for her and horrible loss for the child. But the benediction is that as a small child he could become fully dependent upon the mercy of the Lord, because we're all fully dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. And the form of the Lord's mercy was extended in one way, in the form of his mother, and extended in the form of another way by taking the mother's shelter away, and only the shelter of these teachings that the sages had given, so that one could access the Lord that way, the Lord's mercy that way. So he exhibited detachment, he exhibited attachment to the sages, he exhibited many nice qualities of control of his senses and being very gentle and peaceful. So all those nice qualities, they make a great assist or asset for persistent chanting of the transcendental sound, as Prabhupada is describing here. It makes it effective. And persistently an effort sustained over time, being all the while, the language that Prabhupada has been using here is expecting the mercy of the Lord, not demanding, stomping our little foot saying, hurry up, what are you waiting for, don't you know how hard I'm trying, or some other kind of message like that. Expecting, but because of knowing the Lord's nature, he's merciful, he's loving, he's filled with Benedictine giving wishes for us. So part of that Benedictine giving nature of the Lord is to teach us patience and perseverance and faith, tempering that over time. And whatever time it is, that's the Lord's time. It's his plan. So being expecting the mercy of the Lord, relying upon that, being dependent upon that, and persistently. This is like an outline of all these how-to questions people ask of how to do this and how to do that. It's Narada's explaining how to. So he's recognizing, he's got the mercy of the Lord in a complete sense. He's, the Lord has shown himself to him. Even he's in this, what Prabhupada has called, probationary period. He's in the vidhi sadhana bhakti stage, and the Lord showed himself. It's merciful. So, first is what he felt, next is what he did, resting upon those feelings of deep gratitude and appreciation for the Lord's kindness. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So who's the benediction for? It's both the person who's making that effort, making that sound vibration of glorifying the glories and holy name and fame of the Lord, beneficial for that person and beneficial for anyone who hears it. It's benedictory. So doing, I travel all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and non-envious. So, these are some nice qualities. He was vimada. He was without pride. He wasn't thinking about himself. I saw the Lord. Look at me. Let me tell you all about how fortunate I am and how elevated I am, because I... He was without pride. And vimatsara, these pride and enviousness, they're counted as among the enemies of the soul. Kam, krodh, lobh, mada, matsarja. Here is virmatsara, without being envious. He was satisfied within himself, and therefore he was without envy. And yet, while he was satisfied within himself, it wasn't a prideful self-satisfaction. It was a humble self-satisfaction. Humble because of his recognition of his position in relation to the Lord. Gata spriha, he was completely free from all material desires. We discussed this in two sessions yesterday about having material desire, which is the condition of every living entity in the material world. Having material desire prevents us from experiencing who we are, the spiritual world, Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. It's really a bad deal. And it's everywhere. Like, you know, the mind that's polluted or distorted and disturbed by material desire, then, like the example we were giving, the tree that's reflected on the surface of the water, we only see the reflection because our attention goes to our desires, material desires, rather than the actual object of reality, the soul, and the soul's relation with the Supreme. So, through the mercy that he received from the sages, and through the effort to follow what the sages had said, and sustained that effort over a period of time, he became completely free from desires, as the Lord said to Narada. By your eagerness, by your hankering for association once again with the Supreme Lord, all material desires are eliminated by that powerful hankering for the Supreme. And tushta mana, he was satisfied with that way of life. He was seeing, he described, as he traveled, he saw this and that and the other thing. He saw the metropolises, he saw the villages, he saw the botanical gardens, he saw the mines, he saw the rivers, he saw the mountains, he saw the whole cosmic, all the different features of material manifestation. And he was not interested in becoming the enjoyer of this or that or the other part of it, but rather his affinity for the Lord was deepening as a result of his moving about. So we have inspirations like that, but we also have propensities to try to enjoy. And he's giving us the roadmap how to work our way out of those propensities to enjoy. Chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So doing, I traveled all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and non-envious. The Prabhupada takes this message and turns it into a compassion message, that this is the way of life of a devotee. Their life is for giving this benedictory opportunity to others compassionately. Their only business is to chant, remember the name, form, fame, pastimes of the Lord, and according to personal capacity, distribute the message for others' welfare without motive of personal gain. So this just is resonating with Yayatma Supraseedati, message from the second chapter of this first canto. Asadevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadaha Yitukam Savai Pungsang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Yato Suje Ahoytaki Pratyata Yayatma Supraseedati Supraseedati. Real satisfaction is doing all these things without any consideration of personal gain. Something has to replace that personal gain incentive that exists in the material world and stubbornly carries itself even into spiritual activities, some kind of personal gain or another. And the thing that replaces it is the happiness of service. Because we all want happiness, and the material idea of happiness is you gain something and then you enjoy that gain, and that's your happiness. Even the sense of the contentment that I did it. And even that fundamental idea of I did it is illusion. It erodes or destroys real happiness. So real happiness is without any consideration of personal gain, just for the service of the Lord. That's the message that Narada is sharing with us here. Then text 27, the last verse we'll discuss. And so, O Brahmana Vyasadeva, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna and who therefore had no attachments, being completely freed from all material taints, I met with death as lightning and illumination occurs simultaneously. It's not just thunder and lightning, it's lightning and illumination. So they're simultaneous. They're not even close to a little delay. They're simultaneous. Lightning and illumination. We saw the other night bolts of lightning coming from the sky, and the sky was lighting up like it was 4th of July. Simultaneously. So the message that Prabhupada is giving here is this hankering to be with Krishna, fully absorbed in thought of Krishna, day in, day out, day in, day out. No more material dirts or hankerings. He gives the example of a rich man. He doesn't desire petty small things. He's in another league. So, what does then, as that is so, what to speak of someone who has direct association with Krishna all the time? What is their hankering for something temporary and limited? It's just not part of their program. And continuing in life in that way, Narada describes what happened is, as nature arranged, his material body was unfit for habitation, and so simultaneously, here's Prabhupada's language, simultaneously a devotee changes his material body and develops a spiritual body by the will of the Supreme. That's at the moment of death. It's boom, boom, or boom. Giving up the body, spiritual body, is manifest by the will of the Supreme. Even before death, a pure devotee has no material affection due to his body's being spiritualized like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. End of purport. So, sometimes these things just become little information pieces or information, a database, like what happens when a devotee leaves their body. So it's, we're hearing all at once, spiritual body is manifested by the will of the Lord as the material body is eliminated. There's no delay. It's simultaneous. And repeating one of the themes, but the attachment to the Supreme means detachment from all other things. So how does one become detached? By cultivating attachment to the Supreme. And even in the present life, the gross body can become spiritualized through the contact with devotional service. And devotional service is not just what you do with the body, it's the attachment to the Lord, the feelings of love and devotion for the object that we're using this body to serve, and using our mind to serve, and directing our intelligence towards that goal. The attachment, the affection for the object of devotion spiritualizes the body and the mind and the senses and the intelligence. It's a wonderful science. Okay, any discussion? Bhagavatam is wonderful. Another world takes us to another world.
message rather than Ramadan. And the gap between my present position, it's so wonderful for me. Instantaneously it inspires to be there, like, but I'm here. So how do I process this according to my level?
How to process this wonderful narration and our present position, which is so far from that. One is try to be really clear what that is, not in a romantic way, but exactly as it's being described. And like the teachings of Rupa Goswami of what pure devotional service is, to not be envious of that. You know, but embrace it with your heart, how wonderful that is, as opposed to being envious is something's up here, I feel bad that I'm down here, so let me bring that down. Without envious, embracing that as an objective of life, rather than the enviousness that says bring it down. In a non-envious spirit, appreciate those who are attaining that stage, those who are providing us that understanding of that stage, like just like Narada, gratitude and appreciation. And then being so inspired, strive to reach that stage. But it's not like the child saying to the mother, "Mommy, mommy, I want the moon," and wishing the moon. Is that something unattainable? Recognizing that it's attainable by the mercy of such personalities. And not only attainable, they want each of us to attain that. So carrying that encouragement and empowerment, you take from where you are one little step and one little step and one little step. Take the process given to get there. Cultivate the process very carefully. It's a little bit like Manoj's question. What we can do is be free from those shortcomings ourselves. That's a challenge in itself. And gradually nurturing and encouraging to place faith in Krishna, not to place faith in us, but to place faith in Krishna. that he's, well, he'll protect you. You need to protect yourself. He'll protect you. That's an item of surrender. To feel Krishna's my only protector. But of course he's all powerful, so he can protect me better than I can protect me. Or anyone else combined can protect me. So it's Krishna's shelter is the real position of safety. You build your own construct of safety and it's very vulnerable. It's the real position of safety, and that's a matter of faith. And faith grows slowly. So nurturing faith is and setting good example. And nurturing faith takes a lot of patience. Okay, thank you very much to the Prabhupada team.